This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott.
The American economy...
Climate change without...
Hacking.
Different religions in America.
Sustainability.
Social media.
Security. Freedom.
Technology.
Marriage. Essentially
ethics.
Privacy.
And this is Rethink 2014, conversations and stories and opportunities to reapproach the way that we do business as usual. Today, we're rethinking football. We're going to be talking about how the billion-dollar-plus NFL gets away with not paying taxes in just a minute. But first, we're beginning where many professional careers begin, in college football. Charges of corruption, grade inflation, and a growing concern over head injuries have put college football in the spotlight. Critics charge that collegiate programs have become more economic engines than celebration of amateur sports, and that the danger and violence inherent in the game have no place in institutions of higher learning. NPR's program Intelligence Squared US staged a debate on the motion, ban college football. Malcolm Gladwell argued in favor of a ban. Here are his opening statements from that debate.
This debate is about a very specific question. Right now, in colleges across the country, schools field football teams for the purpose of offering recreation to the players and offering entertainment to fans and students and alumni. And the question is that appropriate? Buzz is going to say that's not appropriate because the players are exploited. And I'm going to say that it's not appropriate because schools should not be in the business of encouraging young men to hit themselves over the head. Let's talk a little bit about hitting over the head. Start with the simple physics of football. The human brain is a mass of soft tissue that is suspended within a hard skull. Every time you get hit, that soft tissue rattles around inside your skull, and the effect of that rattling around is to stretch and sometimes tear the connections between your nerve cells. In the course of everyday life, that almost never happens. In the course of playing football, that happens all the time. It is not unusual in the course of a game for a player to sustain hits to the head of between 40 and 100 Gs. To put that in perspective, if you were to get in your car and drive at 25 miles an hour into a brick wall so that your forehead struck the dashboard of the car, that would be a hit of 100 Gs. If you reversed your car and went and did it over and over again so that you hit the brick wall 30 to 40 times at speeds between 20 and 25 miles an hour, that would be the equivalent of a football game. Now, you're going to hear from Mr. Whitlock and Mr. Green that if we have better rules or better treatment of concussions or better helmets, the effect of that kind of injury can be minimized. That is a fantasy. There are ways to cut down on the number of concussions, but concussions are only a small part of the problem. The real issue is all of those thousands of tiny hits. There isn't a helmet in the world that can be designed that can take the sting out of those hits. And there is no way to play the game of football and remove those hits without turning tackle football into touch football. Now, what's the effect of all of that neurological trauma? Well, we know. It's a condition called CTE, right, which brings about premature death and the equivalent of Alzheimer's in people who are as young as 40 years old. I've seen pictures of the brain scans of people with CTE, and it looks like someone drove a truck across their brain. We don't know how many ex-football players have this condition because you can't diagnose it until they die, right? So you do an autopsy of your brain. But there are people who estimate there are as many as 20% of football players who have this condition. And we also know that there are players as young as 18 years old who have been diagnosed with CTE. Now, I have no problem whatsoever with grown men in full possession of the facts and risks of the game, choosing to participate in a potentially lethal profession. I have no problem with people who smoke cigarettes. I have no problem with people who do deep sea diving. I have no problem with people who want to drive their motorcycles without a helmet on. If you want to play Russian roulette with your brain, fine. But college is a very, very different matter. Every single college in this country, rich or poor, big or small, is supported by the taxpayer dollars of the people in this room. And the reason for that special relationship between us and the world of higher education is that they are charged with a sacred trust, and that is to prepare the minds of young men and women to lead productive lives as full citizens of the United States. And nowhere In that social contract, does it say that it's okay to promote and encourage young men to hit themselves over and over again in the head in the name of entertainment? Thank you.
Malcolm Gladwell there, making the case that college football should be banned. If you'd like to hear the alternate view and the debate in its entirety, you'll find a link at wordofmouthradio.org. Last year, the NFL agreed to pay $765 million to settle head injury-related lawsuits from former players. Despite mounting evidence of football-related injuries, America's passion for the sport is unscathed. In fact, football handily beats all other competition for television viewing. The NFL is the most lucrative sports league in the world, worth more than $35 billion, with revenues reaching $9 billion. And guess what? It is tax-exempt, and has been for nearly 50 years. So, is it time for a rethink? This fall, Oklahoma Senator Tom Coburn introduced legislation that would deny big money sports leagues nonprofit status. Andy Kroll's article in Mother Jones, Should the NFL Lose Its Tax-Exempt Status, examines the push to stop the NFL gravy train. Andy, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Pleasure to be here.
Let's just note here that $500 to $2,600 is the going rate for a ticket to the Super Bowl, which is double of that of last year. And these, by the way, are legitimate tickets, not scalp tickets. With money coming in like that, how can the NFL be a nonprofit?
The NFL has had this sweet deal dating back really to the 1960s. This is really a story of why organizations pay to have really smart lobbyists. There was legislation in the 1960s talking about the merger of the two existing pro football leagues at the time, and as they were trying to figure out what this new entity, the NFL, would be organized as and how the law would govern it, lobbyists for the league snuck into the tax code, as lobbyists are paid to do, language saying that pro football leagues could be treated the same as chambers of commerce and real estate boards in this particular part of the tax code, the 501c6. Since then, the league has enjoyed this tax-exempt status while paying its executives huge sums, seven and eight figures, to run the league. And no one has really mounted a serious challenge to that until recently, when we have Senator Tom Coburn, a Republican of Oklahoma, saying, hey, This deal has got to end.
Well, I'd love to get into that a little, but I'm quoting your article here. In 2011, the NFL paid its five highest-ranking executives almost $60 million, and Roger Goodell, the head, alone pocketed $29 million. This largesse comes largely on the backs of taxpayers in cities that have pro football teams. Well, clearly, 1966 was not the era of big money in the NFL and big sponsorships. Could lawmakers back then have foreseen the NFL becoming such a big money maker?
No, not at all. I mean, it's almost quaint to go back and look at what professional sports, let alone professional football, looked back in the 1960s. You know, this was far from the era of, you know, multi-billion dollar TV contracts, video games, fantasy leagues, you know, apparel sales in the billions of dollars. So, no, I mean, I don't think that anyone thought much of adding professional football leagues. And that's the specific language, by the way, in the tax code. It's not professional sports leagues. It's not, you know, this isn't encompassing the NBA or the NHL. It says professional football league.
Hmm. And distinguish for us, the league is nonprofit. The teams, however, are they?
No, the teams are companies, and they pay money. They pay taxes on the revenues they bring in. But the NFL, as an organization, the head office, as you know, you might hear it on watching Sunday football, is not a small operation by any means. You know, the league office brought in $255 million in 2011 and spent $330 million. And as you pointed out, the highest-ranking executives of the NFL are making Wall Street money.
Maybe even more stunning is the idea of Senator Tom Coburn making a case to Congress that this nonprofit status should end. I mean, he's from Oklahoma, a pro football state. What's the case he made, and how is it received by Congress?
Senator Coburn is, you know, a contrarian in a lot of ways, and is a guy not afraid to, you know, raise uncomfortable truths and pose on, uncomfortable questions to his colleagues and to the people governed by the U.S. government. He said here, you know, he just doesn't believe that the tax code, as it's written right now, should take out winners and losers in such a narrow kind of way. His bill, the Pro Sports Act, would specifically focus on sports leagues with more than $10 million in revenue. Regular people don't get that same kind of exception, so why should a pro football league that clearly isn't having trouble raising and spending money and paying its employees? The bill has basically gone nowhere since it was introduced last fall, but the idea is catching on. As I reported in my piece, there's a organization, anti-corruption organization called Root Strikers, that has taken up Coburn's bill and is urging its members to sort of get some momentum behind it.
Well, Andy, I'm sure you know, a lot of nonprofits make the case that they have to pay their executives a lot of money in order to get the best possible talent. In the grand scheme of things, pushing for the NFL to pay taxes, how much money are we talking about? And is this move purely symbolic?
You're not going to balance the budget, obviously, by revoking the tax-exempt status of the NFL. So in a way, it is largely symbolic. But if you're going to make a symbolic move like this one, this bill is at least going after an organization that's visible and is coming under a lot of fresh criticism about how it operates, whether we're talking about concussions to players, whether we're talking about compensation of injured athletes, or whether we're talking about how the league itself makes money and how that money is treated. So it is, you know, symbolic, but it could be, you know, powerful in that way.
Andy Kroll, associate editor at TomDispatch.com and Mother Jones' dark money reporter. That's where we found his article, Should the NFL Lose Its Tax-Exempt Status? Andy, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
You'll find a link to read the article yourself on our website, wordofmouthradio.org.